Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Beyond the Book. It's Friday, August 9th, 2019. Every week, we check in with Publishers Weekly for the latest news on books and reading. Executive editor Jim Milliot joins me today from the magazine's Manhattan office. He's sitting in for Andrew Albanese, PW senior writer, who returns next week. Welcome to Beyond the Book, Jim.
Thank you, Chris. Good to be back again.
Well, we enjoy chatting with you, Jim. And this week, it's official. It's the end of an era. Elliott Advisors has completed its purchase of Barnes & Noble.
Yeah, it's quite a momentous event here in the bookselling and publishing world. The acquisition, which was first announced in June 7th, was completed yesterday, actually, when BNN's shareholders tendered over 81% of their shares. So now what we have is BNN's becoming a private company, which makes me sad since it was always great to look at their numbers. And they're controlled by this private equity firm, Elliott Advisors, which owns the UK bookstore Waterstones. And as a result of the deal, Elliott, which paid $6.50 per share at a deal valued at $685 million, James Daunt, who's the head of Waterstones, will run both the UK chain and BNN. And BNN founder Len Riggio will fade away into the sunset, or so we think. But, you know, Daunt's got quite a challenge for him. He's going to continue to serve as the Waterstones CEO, but he will relocate from London to New York. And he acknowledged that he does have a learning curve on how the book business works. But, you know, yesterday when they closed the deal, he called it a good day for bookselling and said Barnes & Noble is the greatest of all bookstore names and will now benefit from the support of an owner committed to physical bookselling. With investment and concentration on the core principles of good bookselling, the prospects for this extraordinary company are bright.
So as BNN changes hands, Jim, where does the business stand financially?
Well, I think we got a hint of it when he talks about that they have that Elliott can provide some money. Because while Barnes & Noble, and we may have talked about this in the past with you, actually, even. I talked about it with a lot of other reporters, that they never were in a Borders-like situation. You know, Borders was the second largest chain that went out of business like 3 or 4 years ago. So in their last fiscal year, which just ended in April, BNN sales fell 3% to about $3.5 billion. But they did manage to post a net profit of $3.8 million compared to a loss of $125 million in fiscal 2018. And comparable store sales, which is, you know, a key measurement of any retail operation, fell about 2% in the year. And most distressingly for publishers, there's a 3.9% decline in comparable bookstore sales or book sales. So sales of books were down higher than some of the other material they sell there, like the cafe and toys and games. And while at its peak, they had over 700 stores, they've closed about 100 book superstores between 2009 and 2019. And now they're down to 627 stores. But that arm of the operation is still profitable. And in the last fiscal year, it had EBITDA, my favorite of all acronyms, of $111 million on sales of $3.5 billion. So while they've done a good job at improving the bottom line, they have not done a good job of reviving the revenue side. They thought they had maybe crossed a threshold over the holiday season when sales were actually up, but they kind of slid back in January in the final quarter. So Daunt, who will stay CEO at Waterstones, said turning around the falling sales trend is his top priority.
And as you say, Jim, it's hard not to miss the very strong hint that Elliott's prepared to put some money into the store. So what can we expect to see if we drop into a Barnes & Noble in the days ahead?
Well, his initial quotes are kind of nice. He says, you know, he acknowledges this is a private equity firm. They're probably going to want to sell BNN at some point. But before they do that, they have to make the bookseller shiny, bigger, and better. And to accomplish that, you know, as we've alluded to a few times, they were prepared to invest some money, which BNN was having a tough time doing since they've been really trying to find ways over the last 3 or 4 years of staunching the losses from the Nook division, which we can get to in a few minutes. And as Daunt said, the simple fact is that BNN needs money. People want to shop in places that look modern, clean, and inviting. The B&N stores look tired and need a little Botox.
He's got away with words. We have to say that.
Yes,
shinier, bigger, better, in need of a Botox shot. Absolutely. It's hard to argue. And Jim Elliot, as you already hinted at, Elliot Advisors' completion of its purchase of Barnes & Noble marks the end of a bookselling era in another way, which can be summed up in two words: Len Riggio.
Yes. Len has been probably the dominant force in bookselling, at least physical bookselling, for over 30 years. You know, he did get in a battle with Amazon, didn't fare too well. But Len, I think some people probably know, he started as running a college bookstore down in New York City. He grew that steadily. And then in 1986, he surprised the bookselling and publishing world when Barnes & Noble, which at the time was much smaller than B. Dalton, bought that chain. And that kind of thrust him into the forefront of bookselling. And he took it and ran with it. He led the expansion of the bookstore concept. You know, those, I think, pretty familiar with those stores now that average about 30,000 square feet, stock tens and thousands of titles, have those plush seating areas where people flip through books and never buy them. And they do have restrooms. And the rapid growth of the superstores, you know, was not without its critics, one of which was the ABA, which filed a lawsuit against B&N and Borders in 1998, charging them with receiving secret discounts and other favorable terms with publishers that were not available to independents. And this was a real contentious period there between all different parts of the industry, the independents and the publishers, the independents and Barnes & Noble, Barnes & Noble and the publishers. That suit was eventually settled in April 2001 with the chains admitting to nothing but paying a few million dollars over to the ABA. And some other things B&N has done is they developed their own line of proprietary books. They went out and actually bought Sterling Publishing, which is a pretty big part of their business now. They were an early entrant into online bookselling, but they never got it right. And B&N.com was never a serious challenger to Amazon.
And Riggio not only tried to compete with Amazon online, Jim, but also with Barnes & Noble's own reading device, e-reading device, the Nook. That effort didn't fare much better than the house website.
Fortunately not. It was by far Riggio's biggest gamble, is getting involved with trying to develop an e-reading device. And the ironic part is they did start off having some success. They won some critical praise for the Nook, with some tech guys saying, you know, it was a better device than what Amazon was offering through the Kindle. And early on, it had been gaining some sales traction. But the watershed moment really came in the 2012 holiday season, when both Apple and Amazon spent what is estimated to be a total of about $1 billion promoting their various devices. And Barnes & Noble could come up with only about $100 million in advertising, which doesn't sound too bad. But at any rate, over that 2012 holiday season, the sales of the Nooks collapsed. And from that time on, B&N was looking for ways to recover from what it had got involved with in the digital era.
And at this time, Jim, I guess sales of Nook amount only to about 2% of B&N's total revenue. And that's, I guess, 100% of the story of this week, at least on the business side. But we really should be sure to close with a note on the passing of Toni Morrison, a Pulitzer Prize winner, a Nobel Prize winner, but also someone who was a towering figure as an editor in publishing, someone who brought to the world titles and authors of extreme importance to literature, to American history, many of them, of course, from the African-American community.
Correct. One of her most famous books that she published as an editor was called The Black Book. You know, we have a pretty extensive archive here, and we're working on stories that really is just going to focus on her days as an editor at Random House. And one choice quote that I'm pretty sure we're going to use is, obviously, she was one of the first women of color to be in publishing. Quick aside, even today, 86% of publishing is white. She said, well, White editors have been making stupid decisions for a long time, so why don't we hire some black editors and they can make the same stupid decisions? So fair is fair, I guess.
One of the things that many of the interviews I've heard have noted is she had a wonderful sense of humor.
Yes, I guess it comes through there if you say it right.
A little bit of a sting to it as well.
Right.
Jim Milliot, PW Executive Editor, thanks for joining us this week and for sitting in for Andrew Albanese, your colleague there at Publishers Weekly. Have a great weekend.
You too. Thanks a lot, Chris.
Up next on Beyond the Book, in the emerging area of online trust technology, the startup NewsGuard has decided to disinfect the web of false reporting with the detergent of journalism. A team of experienced journalists researches online news brands, determines when a website has a hidden agenda or publishes falsehoods, and then posts red or green rating signals visible as a plugin on many web browsers.
In the print era, people would go to a newsstand in order to acquire newspapers, and they might say, like the Philadelphia Inquirer, I don't want the National Inquirer, knowing that one of them was a respected local newspaper and the other one was a kind of grocery store checkout gossip sheet. On the internet, where people are thumbing through their Facebook feeds or their Twitter feeds or looking at the next video that pops up on YouTube, the value of those brands has so disappeared. There's so many brands, people don't know what to make of any particular one. And that is the problem that NewsGuard set out to help solve on behalf of news consumers. Which websites are trying to do journalism? Which ones are doing something else? And for all of them, to give them a red rating or a green rating and a nutrition label write-up that explains everything that a reader would want to know about that particular website so that he or she can make up his or her mind about whether to read news from that website with an extra grain or two of salt.
Taking on fake news with real journalism. Next on Beyond the Book. Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center. Our co-producer and recording engineer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. Subscribe to the program wherever you go for podcasts and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. The complete Beyond the Book podcast archive is available at beyondthebook.com. I'm Christopher Keneally. Thanks for listening and join us again soon on CCC's Beyond the Book.